Good evening, one and all. I know, 1st of May or May Day, whatever. It should be out with your maypole dancing around the ribbons, plaiting things like that. And of course, it's a holiday in England, or it's no Monday being a holiday in England. But it is May Day, the 1st of May, and I am here with another guest. Well, yeah, looking back. Decades and almost centuries ago, when I was young, so young, I knew the Red Sea when it was, no, the Dead Sea when it was just deal, not dead. Stuff that we have today that we take for granted or that has been discovered and taken for granted just wasn't there. I mean, I cannot remember anybody that was lactose intolerant or anybody who couldn't eat peanuts or anything like that. And if somebody was a bit slow or a bit backwards, that's what they were. They were a little bit backwards, or perhaps, you can do better if you try harder. There was no such thing as the likes of ADHD, for instance. It just wasn't known, wasn't there. It was just this person's a little bit backwards. But that we've come a long way since that time. But my guest today, she has written a great book to help with, as the title says, solving the ADHD riddle. What can I tell you about her? She is a distinguished psychologist, certified rehabilitation counselor, dedicated for supporting individuals navigating ADHD, anxiety, trauma, and other psychological challenges. Better introduce her, haven't I? Because on the show today, I have the one and only Dr. Connie McReynolds, or as I'm going to call her, Connie. Hi, Connie, how you doing?
Hi, I'm great. Thank you so much for having me on today. It's a pleasure to be here.
Okay, before we start getting into the book and that, I will let you know that I have a 3-year-old grandson who has autism. He's been level 3, whatever it is, and I see so much that you feel so helpless about, and the child feels helpless about because they can't communicate. And I would have thought that that was a big thing in ADHD, is it as well? That they, it's actually the communication is a very hard and frustrating thing for them.
Well, yes, I think there is some aspect of that for children, particularly those who've been diagnosed with ADHD. And what I've really come to understand through my work over the past 15 years is that there's really a reason for that. And within the realm that I've been working, we actually can find some of the underlying causal factors for that and do something about it. So we're able to help the communication skills of a lot
Right,
of these children and
which
adults, in fact.
big thing. I mean, I know he, again, talking about my grandson, he's just been given like a tablet. So if he wants some water, he presses the picture of the glass of water on the tablet and stuff like that. Which to him, he doesn't have to sort of, he can't sort of speak, but he doesn't have to sort of scream or what have you. He can just go to his mother and say she, press the thing for a drink or something like that. Simple things like that, and yet it helps with the communication. When did you first get into the, to specializing, for want of a better term, the whole ADHD riddle, as your book says?
Well, it really did start about 15 years ago. I do come from 30 years of experience in rehabilitation counseling and 25 some years in rehabilitation psychology. So that's the background that I have come from. And I always like to say my mother taught second grade for 32 years in the same classroom.
It's
So I always joke that I kind of grew up in second grade, but I grew up learning about the stories
right.
of some of the children. And I think that probably stuck more than I realized it did, because fast forward all these years or decades since then, it really became a curiosity for me when I was building an institute at a university here in Southern California, and I came across this process known as neurofeedback and started exploring that, built a clinic and opened it up to the public and the community to have access to these services, and it was really through parents and just working with all these children that I came to recognize there was something going on early on within the first, you know, 3 or 4 years. There was just a lot of the same kind of situation, which is parents were coming in, the traditional interventions weren't working. Maybe they had worked for a short period of time, but they weren't providing lasting solutions. That's what I kept hearing just over and over and over. And as we were providing our services, we started finding that, and parents started reporting that the changes were lasting, that they were seeing ongoing lasting improvement. Some of the behavioral problems they'd been experiencing probably forever with their children had started to resolve. Children were doing better in school. The behavioral interventions at school were dropping off. There were fewer teacher complaints and administration calls to parents. So it was a palpable difference in these families' lives. And I just kept going with it because people just kept coming in the door.
Right. Because, I mean, normal thing these days, obviously, is Ritalin or something like that, you know. And yeah, sometimes it works for a bit. Sometimes it doesn't work. And, of course, there's also the worry that they're going to be, the children are going to be on that for the rest of their lives.
Yes, and that is a big worry for a lot of parents.
Yeah.
And I kind of wish I had a dollar for every parent who had said that. We could probably fund a couple of children, you know, to come through the program, because it's such a big concern. And almost every day I'll have a parent call and say, you know, the first line of defense with the psychiatrist was to prescribe medications, and we consider that to be the last option, you know, for our child.
Yeah.
What can we do?
Yeah.
We don't want to start with the medications. And so that's really the feedback that I've had for years now from parents, is they want something different.
So what did you, you know, through your years, obviously, and that, what did you find that really helped in solving this riddle?
Well, the first part that helped was having access to a different kind of assessment. It's a computer-based assessment that's looking at auditory and visual processing problems in a different way than most of the traditional school assessments look, the traditional very long drawn-out neuropsychological assessments. These educational evaluation assessments, sometimes these things can take days. We can get this. It's well validated, well studied, good reliability on this assessment, and it takes 20 minutes to look at 37 areas of auditory and visual processing. And I can say without a shadow of a doubt that I find it more useful than a lot of these other assessments, and so do parents. Because when they are in the conference room, I'm meeting with them, the child is in a different room taking the assessment, they're sharing the stories of the trials and tribulations that their child is having, that they're experiencing with their child, a lot of the difficulties, the behaviors, and I, you know, 20, 30 minutes later, I'm presenting them with this assessment. I've been in the room with them the whole time. And I'm reading back to them, and sometimes almost verbatim language, what they had described as behaviors. Only this time we have the language to say what it is.
That's a big thing, isn't it? I'm sure that would be the big thing to actually, for you to know what it is, and for the parents to be told in layman's language, for want of a better sense, you know, what is wrong. I mean, they say, okay, well, they hit their head. They won't look you in the eyes, you know, stuff like that. You can understand that, but if they say, well, you get this and it's not sparking the neutrons in the brain and you know, what does that mean? How would a parent understand that? You know, you can read online but you don't know. You haven't studied medicine as a parent. Well, not to that degree sort of thing, you know. Is this what you found, that you were able to then almost, I guess, do a roadmap for the child, come parent or whatever?
That is, it is exactly what we do. When we find across these 37 markers we find the areas of strength, and I can speak to the parents and I can say, okay, see these areas where these markers are very strong. This is what you play to. These areas is where the floor drops out. This
Right.
is where it all goes south on you. You know, for example, if a child doesn't have the ability to process multi-step instructions, that's going to fall apart every single day for everyone. They may need something in writing. They may need a visual chart if they can't hang on to those steps. And so those become the workarounds while we're doing our interventions, while we're doing the brain training.
Am I wrong? Is there sort of lots of different parts of ADHD? Is there the sort of the concentration? Is there the anxiety, a panic? Is that all different parts of ADHD, or am I wrong?
Well, I think part of what has happened with the diagnostic world is that we spend so much time trying to categorize symptoms without ever really getting underneath
right.
to the root of the
yeah.
problem.
Yeah.
And so if you're only at the superficial level of looking at symptoms, and I've even written about this, I mean, the difficulty with this is a child can walk into a psychiatrist's office, they're going to see mental dysfunction and write a prescription.
Mm-hmm.
Parents walk the child into a behaviorist, they're going to see behavioral problems, and they're going to implement a behavioral problem, and on down the line it goes. The difficulty is everything at that level is at the superficial, you know, perspective of trying to just get rid of the behaviors instead of understanding what the behaviors are actually saying. So if we can pull back for a moment and look at what are these behaviors saying, what happens when you tell your child to go do four or five things? Well, they always forget, and the frustration is palpable. And so it's like, well, how often does that ever work when you tell him or her four or five? It never works.
Right.
It's like, okay, then there's something there. There's a clue right there. There's a clue that there's a problem with auditory sequential memory right there.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you, that's very good, because I can certainly understand and relate to that. But a lot of times it's just a wave of stuff almost thrown at you, you know?
Yeah. Well, it depends on, right. It really depends on how many of these factors, these 37 markers,
yep.
a child is dealing with. And every child, I can tell you, has a unique pattern with this. Some children.
Exactly. There are no two the same. And this is what obviously makes it very hard to treat. It's not like it's mumps or measles or something like that. It's, you know, it's everybody's different.
They are. It isn't like a broken arm where you can
exactly.
do an X-ray.
Exactly, yeah.
You put the bone back in place, you cast it, and then you monitor it to make sure it's healing. That's pretty good for Western medicine. Where things don't seem to work quite as well is in the realm that we're dealing with ADHD and even a lot of other diagnostic criteria, because those diagnostic criteria tend to turn solely on symptoms. They don't really get underneath it. And so I've tackled and worked with people who have anxiety, panic disorder, phobias, chronic pain, trauma, post-traumatic stress, military sexual trauma, the list goes on.
Right.
And underneath, about 85 to 90% of the people, regardless of what brings them in the door, underneath that, lo and behold, are these auditory and visual processing problems that I feel like are contributors to the other factors that they're struggling with. It doesn't mean they've caused those other difficulties. Trauma has its own source. However, if I can't follow instructions or get through therapy because I can't remember what the therapist is asking me to do, I can't remember the behavioral interventions that are being, you know, told to me all the time. If I cannot remember that, those interventions are less effective than they would be if I was able to hang on to what the person was saying to me.
One of the things that I know, and in your book as well, is the fact it's not just, you know, yes, it's understanding it. Yes, it's, you know, becoming aware, finding out some of the problems. But you don't just do that. You set out to resolve the issues, which is
Absolutely.
one step further than lots of people do. Okay, so yeah, he's got ADHD, you know, we could do this, do this, we could help him with that, give him this, that, and the other. But you don't. You say, okay, let's find the resolution. Let's fix the challenges that they have, invest in them and stuff like that. And that's what something you definitely go into in your book, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. And I will say it's why I hadn't written the book 10 years earlier, because I really wanted to make sure this wasn't just another book of saying, oh, here, guess what? Here's what's wrong with your kiddo. Here are a few of these techniques. Good luck with that. It really wasn't until we were able to start delivering telehealth services, which happened during the pandemic. And out where I live, we were 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, looking at the potential for another lockdown. And I actually contacted the software developer and I said, we have to come up with a solution to this because I have to be able to work with people who are more than just 10 or 15 minutes from my clinics here. This is important. We need to be able to help children who are struggling. We knew the anxiety was going through the roof, the trauma was going through the roof in children, and we needed to be able to tackle that. And so once that was in place and we had piloted that for a while, and I had comfort with the fact we're able to deliver the same level of intervention regardless of where someone is sitting, then I felt like it's time to put this together and get the book published so that more people can learn about what I call the resolution to the ADHD problems that we have. And I've recently just kind of decided I'm going to call myself the
There you go.
ADHD Mythbuster because I think that's what I need
Right.
to do.
Definitely. Definitely. I mean, the researchers and the experts and that, you know, that's childish suffering from this, that, and the other. But what you go down to is it's processing the shortcomings. It's not a case they can't hear. It's not a case they can't see. Well, not in many cases. It's the brain can't basically hold and interpret the information. It's there, and the child most likely knows. I mean, we don't know. The child most likely knows there, but it's like you know, if you're on a road, a street map, you know, you know where you've got to get to. But sometimes you're not sure which way, and you might take wrong turnings, or you might sort of end up going down dead end roads or something like that. Whereas if you know the way, and if you can find out and interpret the way, and let the that you know the car's got to go and take the car that way, then you'll get to the you get the outcome you want, not sort of guessing left, rights, and what have yous.
Right. It's really getting to the heart, what I call the root of the concern in the areas, which is when we can find this, we can now see how the auditory and the visual processing weaknesses, these are just weak neuronal pathways in the brain, which
That's what I
means
thought, yeah.
there just hasn't been the repetition on that pathway to make it strong enough for that person, that child or adult, to be able to rely on that part of the brain to solve whatever that part of the brain needs to solve. And it's resolved by simply training the brain to get stronger, like going to the gym. This is literally a gym for the brain. And through repetition, which is the use of the term we now recognize, which is called neuroplasticity, which means our brain changes all the time. And there used to be this belief that when you hit a certain age, it was just a downhill slide.
Exactly. I mean, my father had Parkinson's and then went into dementia. And that's what they said. You know, that it's not functioning. You're not, the sparks aren't reaching the brain, sort of thing. And there's so much we don't know about the brain, obviously. What do we use? About 4% of it or something really weird, you know?
Very much for sure.
And yet, I mean, you talk about ADHD being affected by it. You talk about autism being affected by it. You talk about dementia being affected by it. There is so much all to do with the short circuits, for it put it in that sort of term. When you start working with a child, you've got the ground bait, you've got a starting point from that software and what you sort of learned from that. How do you identify the challenges and start with the brain training?
It really comes from these assessments because I'm looking at those 37 areas. That kicks out a 15-page report that highlights all the strengths and all the weaknesses. And then we follow this up with a little bit of a different type of assessment where we're looking at memory, conceptualization, and sequencing, which is what I call kind of the applied aspect of how the brain is working. The front end is understanding how the brain is taking in auditory and visual information. And then from those assessments, plus I have met with the child, I've met with the parents, I've gathered the story, I've gathered the day-to-day life structure of what's going on, what's happening in school, what's happening at home, what do you see as the impact of all of these challenges? And so I have that story or that narrative of the child and of the family. And from all of those data points, then we pull out the most significant findings first. And we will deal with that. I just did an intake today on someone who was severely impaired with fine motor hyperactivity, which is a different kind of hyperactivity than just the little kid that runs around all over the place. This is the type of hyperactivity that really is distracting in the brain. But if you have always had this, you absolutely cannot know what it's like to not have it. And so we will tackle that hyperactivity first. Because when we can dial that down and get that within the normal limits, it's what we call it, then many times all these other difficulties kind of fall into place and we start seeing a lot of change. In some cases, we really have to be very methodical and kind of go situation by situation or weakness by weakness for the person. But we can do a lot of that all at the same time. So the hyperactivity, auditory processing problems, memory, we tackle that simultaneously with the 30-minute training plan.
And there's lots of things that parents can do to help. I mean, lots of simple things, even to like the fine motor skills and all along that sort of side of things as well. Do you go in, I mean, in your book, do you go into that sort of thing, things that parents can do to help
Yes,
with it?
I do. I don't know if I do the kinesthetic piece of it, but I give them tips. So
Good.
part of it, there's a checklist in the auditory processing chapter and in the visual. There's a checklist at the end of that. So parents can go through those lists and see where their child maybe has these areas of difficulty. Most children have a combination, which is what makes it a little bit difficult to kind of figure out what to do. But within the book are a lot of tips. So tips for if you discover your child does have some auditory processing. Here are some ways of working with your child, same with visual. And then I'll say, thankfully, there aren't too many children, but there are children and adults who don't have enough processing on either the auditory or the visual to even score. And these are the children who are really in the deepest trouble because they can be very bright, because none of this has anything to do with cognitive abilities and intellectual abilities. They can look very developmentally delayed when in fact they may not be.
What sort of response have you had to the book?
I've had people all over. I've had adults buy it, thinking they're buying it to learn about their child, and then they're finding themselves in it. And and it's been really nice because people are finding this, they're finding answers to the questions they've had. I do a lot of consults around the country with people, and I do most of those for no charge. They're usually 15, 20 minutes just talking with people and seeing if I can provide some guidance or assistance
And
to
that
them.
helps that somebody who understands a parent's situation. That is that as a parent, that is the hardest thing. You try and explain, and it's so hard for you to explain sometimes because you're looking for it from a biased point of view for a start, because it's your child, etc. And you don't know the words, you don't know the sort of technical terms and stuff
You
like that.
don't.
Oh, well, you can't pick stuff up, and he won't look me in the eyes, and stuff like that. They know you'd know what that is. That the person people like you know that, and if you've got somebody that can respond to that and say, "Oh yeah, I know exactly what you mean," you sort of look at him when on Zoom or what have you, or a face talk with him, and he won't look me in the eyes. Now, 6 months ago, all of a sudden, he was looking at me in the eyes on the phone, on the phone. To me, that was such a special thing. That he finally was able to do it. Now, you talk that to some people, they wouldn't. They'd say, okay, so he looks you in the eyes. Yeah, but that's a huge thing when you're into that level.
It
Time is beating us. I was enjoying so much, Connie.
is.
I'm sorry. This happens every time I get into a book. I run out of time. What I'm going to do now is hand the show over to you, so you can explain to everybody where they can find out more about you, and of course your book, Solving the ADHD Riddle.
Of course. Well, thank you so much. So the book is available on Amazon, and you can also find the link to that on my website. And my website is my name, so it's www. Connie, which is Connie McReynolds, MCREYNOLDS.com. So ConnieMcReynolds.com. And on that website, I actually have video clips of a teenager who's talking about what his life was like before and after neurofeedback. He wasn't ours, but he was here in Southern California. I have articles. I have a contact form if people want me to reach out to them for a brief consult. They can fill out the contact form, provide your phone number and your email address, and a brief description of really what you're dealing with. I'm happy to reach out and see if I can assist. There's also, when you get on the website, there's a way to sign up for my newsletter. And I promise your listeners, I don't pummel people with a lot of issues of that. But it does give people the first three chapters of my book for free. So it helps them get into this to see if they resonate with it. And the book is available on Amazon in paperback, an ebook, and an audiobook that I did a recording of.
Okay, thank you so much, Connie, for being a guest on the show. It's been very insightful, very interesting, and very good to understand and to realize that there is hope for people for parents out there and for children and what have you. So that's great. Keep up the good work, and thank you so much for being a guest on the show.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
My pleasure. Thank you. Well, there's my guest today. Very another one. So yesterday we had a great chat, and today another really interesting chat with, as she said, Dr. Connie McReynolds. And as she said, her website is conniemcreynolds.com. Lots of stuff on there, services, all sorts of media testimonials, sort of thing, examples and stuff like that, and of course the bits about her book. Great stuff. Well, that's the end of the chats for this week. Sunday, I will be back with my music programs. First off, from 5 to 6 p.m., we have Those Were the Days, music from the 20th century, where we get a theme and play the music round that theme. Well, we've been going through the colours, haven't we? And this week, we're on to, well, we had red last week, but this week we're going to have red with a bit. So we'll have red with pink and purple, and we might even have a couple of weeks of that. The reddish sort of thing, shall I say. Anyway, that's from 5 to 6 p.m. And then after that, from 6 to 7 p.m., we have the Swinging 60s, music from the 60s, not just the British Invasion, but from all over the world. And then next Tuesday and Wednesday, I'll be back with two fresh guests. Until then, though, as always, we have one thing left to say. Don't forget.